Chapter 24. First round. The last set. My prince, what do you think? 1. Jaya sat down next to Hami on the bench and took his hand. It lay limply in hers.
I don't want this. I know, Hami said, without looking at her. It's all right. Maybe you'll beat me. I'm not strong, you know, not like Eris. Maybe.
The door opened and two night soldiers came in. They looked as excited as living corpses can, their auras pulsing as if within them dead hearts were still beating.
First set, hump hump. Don't keep His Majesty waiting, kiddies. He's taken his place.
At first, none of them moved. And for a wild moment, I almost believed Amit's strike was going to happen. Until I thought of the consequences for the strikers, that was. After looking at the board again to be sure some miracle hadn't changed the listings, the first half dozen got up. Fremi and Murph, Amit and a short tubby fellow named Whale, Hami and Jaya. She was holding his hand as they went out, shrinking to avoid the aura of the night soldier standing closest to her. In the days of Galleon rule, the rest of us would have heard the anticipatory cheers of a packed stadium as the combatants emerged. I strained my ears and thought I heard a faint spatter of applause, but it could have been my imagination. Probably was, because the stands of the Field of Eldin, formerly the Field of the Monarchs, were almost entirely empty. The boy I'd met on my journey here had been right. Lillimar was a haunted city. A place where only the dead, the living dead, and a few ass-kissers still remained. No butterflies here. If not for the night soldiers, escape might be possible, I thought. Then I remembered there were also a couple of female giants to consider, and Flight Killer himself. I didn't know what he was now, what transformation he might have undergone, but one thing seemed sure. He was no longer Leah's club-footed little brother, with a hump on his back or a lump on his neck. Time passed. Hard to tell how long. Several of us visited the pissing gutter, me included. Nothing brings on the need to piss like the fear of dying. At last, the door opened and Amit entered. He had a small cut across the back of his hairy left hand. Otherwise, he was unmarked. Meezle hurried to him as soon as Amit's undead escort stepped back.
What was it like? Is Whale really?
Amit pushed him so hard that Meezle went sprawling on the tiles.
I'm back and he's not. That's all I've got to say and all you need to hear. Leave me alone.
He went to the end of the bench, sat down, and put his hands to the sides of his bent head. It was a posture I'd seen many times on baseball fields. Most often when a pitcher gave up a key hit and got pulled. It was the posture of a loser, not a winner. But of course, we would all be losers. Unless something happened.
Save her.
Leah's gray maid had whispered to me. And was I now supposed to save them all? Just because my hair was blonde under repeated applications of dirt? It was absurd. Claw continued to eye-fuck me. He intended to still be around at dinner time.
Come the last death match of the day, I wouldn't even be able to save myself.
The next one to return was Murph. One of his eyes was swollen shut, and the right shoulder of his shirt was damp with blood. Stooks saw, understood that his comedy partner was no more, gave a soft cry and covered his eyes. We waited. Watching the door. At last, it opened and Jaya came in. She was as pale as window glass, but seemingly unmarked. Tears streamed down her cheeks.
I had to,
she said, not just to me, to all of us.
I had to, or they would have killed us both.
2. The second set was called. Yano to fight Doc Freed, Iota to fight Jacka, Measle to fight Sam. When they were gone, I sat down next to Jaya. She wouldn't look at me, but the words spilled out of her, as if keeping them in would burst something inside her.
He couldn't really fight. You know how he is. How he was. But he put up a show of it. For me, I think. They were crying for blood. You'll hear it when your turn comes. Crying for him to put the bitch down. Crying for me to get behind him and stab him in the neck.
There are knives? I asked.
No, spears, with short handles. Also gloves, with spikes on the knuckles. They're laid out on the table where the drinks were when we practiced. They want you in close, you know. They want to see as much stabbing and punching as they can before someone goes down. But I took one of the poles, you know, the...
She mimed a swing. The fighting sticks.
Yes. We went around and around. Fremy was dead, his throat cut. And Hamey almost slipped in the blood. Whale was lying on the track.
Yeah,
Hammett said without looking up.
Stupid git tried to run.
We were the last. That was when Aaron said 5 minutes more or we'd both be put down. He could see we weren't really trying. Hamey ran at me, waving his little spear off to one side, so stupid. And I hit him in the stomach with the butt of my stick. He screamed. He dropped the spear on the grass and kept screaming. Hamey's stomach, I thought. His endlessly sick stomach. I couldn't stand the sound. They were applauding and laughing and saying things like, good hit, and the kitty brought him low with that. And Hamey kept screaming. I picked up the spear. I never killed anybody, but I couldn't stand him screaming, so I...
You can stop there, I said. She looked at me, eyes full, cheeks wet.
You have to do something, Charlie. If you're the prince that was promised, you have to do something.
I could have told her that Prince Charlie's first job would be not getting killed by Claw, but I thought she felt badly enough without that, so I just gave her a brief hug. Is he there? The flight killer? She shuddered and nodded. What does he look like? I was thinking of that seat of honor, with the armrest slanting outward as if whoever it was meant for was extremely fat or at least extremely bulky.
Awful. Awful. His face is green, as if there's something wrong with him inside. Long white hair falling down his cheeks from under the crown he wears. His eyes are as big as soft-boiled eggs. It's a broad face, so wide it's hardly human. His lips are fat and red like he was eating strawberries. That was all of them I could see. He's swaddled in a huge purple robe from the chin down. But I could see it moving, like he was holding a pet underneath. He's awful. Monstrous. And he laughs. The others applauded when Hamey died, but he just laughed. Drool came out of his mouth on both sides. I saw it in the gas lights. There was a woman beside him, tall and beautiful with a little beauty mark beside her mouth.
Petra, I said. A man grabbed her by the boob and kissed her neck after I knocked Amit down.
She...
Jaya shuddered again.
She kissed him where his spit ran down. She licked it off his green face.
Iota came in, escorted by a night soldier. He saw me and gave a nod. So Jacka was gone. 3. When the door closed, I went over to Iota. He didn't have a mark on him.
The bitch is there, he said. Red Molly, watching from the track, below the box where the swells sit. Her hair ain't really red, but orange. The color of carrots. Sticks up all around her head in quills. 15 feet from toes to top. Wearing a leather skirt. Tits like boulders. Each of them must weigh as much as a 5-year-old kitty. Got a knife in a scabbard on her hip. Looks almost as long as the little spears they give us to fight with. I think she watches to see what moves the winners make. For later, you know. That made me think of Coach Harkness and practices on Thursdays before Friday night games. On those afternoons, we knocked off 20 minutes early and sat in a team room less fancy than this one, but otherwise about the same. Coach would roll in a TV, and we'd watch our upcoming opponents, their moves and plays, especially the quarterback. He'd show us the enemy QB 20 or 30 times on isolated camera, every fake, jink, and stutter step. I told Uncle Bob about that once, and he laughed and nodded.
Coach is right, Charlie. Cut off your enemy's head, the body dies.
I didn't like her watching like that, I said. I was hoping she'd take me for granted, and when we got down to it, maybe I could find a way to stick her or brain her. Instead, she's going to get 4 chances to watch how I do, and I ain't going to get a chance to see how she does at all. I didn't remark on his unspoken assumption that I'd be gone by then, promised prince or no promised prince. Claw thinks it's going to be him. I laughed as if he hadn't just killed one of his longtime mates in Moline. It'll be Claw against me when it's down to 2, no doubt. I've come to like you, Charlie, but I don't think you'll even put a touch on him. But I know his weakness.
Which would be what?
He did me down that once. Poked me so hard in my throat, it's a damn wonder I can still talk. But I learned from it.
Which didn't answer the question.
Measle came in next, so Sam was finished. A few minutes later, the door opened again, and I was surprised to see Doc Freed come in, although not entirely under his own power. Percy was with him, one of his flipper hands hooked into Freed's armpit, helping him along. Doc's right thigh was bleeding heavily through a makeshift bandage, and his face was grotesquely battered. But he was alive, and Yano was not. I was sitting with Double and Eris.
He won't be able to fight again, I said.
Not unless the second round's 6 months from now, and maybe not even then.
It won't be 6 months, Eris said. It won't even be 6 days. And he'll fight, or he'll die.
It sure wasn't high school football.
4. Bolt and Bendo survived the third set. So did Kamet. He was cut in several places when he came back and said he'd been sure he was done for. Then poor Dami had one of his coughing fits, bad enough to double him over. Kamet saw his opportunity and ran his short spear into the back of Dami's neck. Doc was lying on the floor, either asleep, unlikely given his injuries, or passed out. While the rest of us were waiting for the third set to be over, Claw continued staring at me with that endless grin. The only time I could get away from it was when I went to one of the buckets to scoop out a handful of water. But when I turned back, there he was, eye-fucking me.
I know his weakness, Iota had said. He did me down that once, but I learned from it.
What had he learned? I replayed the fight, if you could call it that, in Eye's cell. The brilliant speed of Claw's rabbit punch to Eye's throat. The rolling bucket. Claw turning to see it. Yano, now the late Yano, saying, "If you killed him, you'll pay a high price." Eye picking himself up and going to his pallet while Claw bent to pick up the bucket. Maybe thinking to brain Eye with it if he tried again.
If there was something there, I didn't see it.
When the third set was done, Percy came in pushing a cart. Aaron accompanied him. There was the smell of roast chicken, which I would have found enticing under other circumstances, but not when it was apt to be my last meal.
"Eat hearty, kiddies,"
Aaron cried.
"You can't say we don't feed you well."
Most who'd won their battles for the day eagerly grabbed meat from the cart. Those who had yet to fight declined, with one exception. Claw grabbed a half chicken from Percy's cart and chomped into it, his eyes never leaving me. The blow, Iota on the stones of his cell, the rolling bucket, I crawls to his pallet, hand at his throat. Claw looks for the bucket, picks it up. What was there that Iota had seen and I was missing? The cart came to me. Aaron was watching Percy, so there was no salute. Then Doc Freed groaned, rolled on his side, and vomited across the floor. Aaron turned and pointed at Kamet and Bendo, sitting side by side on a nearby bench.
"You and you, clean that mess up."
I took this momentary distraction to raise my hand with my thumb and finger pinched together. I wiggled my hand in a writing gesture. Percy gave a hardly perceptible shrug, maybe because he understood, or maybe to make me stop before Aaron saw. When Aaron turned back, I was selecting a drumstick from the rolling buffet and thinking that Percy's understanding or lack of it wouldn't matter if Claw killed me in the day's final match.
"Last meal, kiddie,"
that jumbo gentleman said to me.
"Enjoy it."
He's trying to psych me out, I thought. Of course, I'd already known that, but the actual words for what he was doing brought it into focus, made it concrete. Words have that power. And they open something inside me. A hole. Maybe even a well. It was the same thing that had opened during my nasty outings with Birdie Bird, and during my confrontations with Christopher Pauly and Peterkin the dwarf. If I was a prince, it certainly wasn't of the kind where the movie ended with the vapidly pretty blonde guy embracing the vapidly pretty girl. There was nothing pretty about my dirt-caked blonde hair, and my battle with Claw wouldn't be pretty either. It might be short, but it wouldn't be pretty. I thought, I don't want to be a Disney prince. To hell with that. If I have to be a prince, I want to be a dark one.
"Stop looking at me, fuckface," I said.
His smile was replaced with a look of surprised puzzlement, and I realized why even before I threw my drumstick at him. It was because that word, fuckface, came from the well, came out in English, and he hadn't understood it. I missed him by a mile. The drumstick clanged on one of the buckets and fell to the floor, but he jerked in surprise anyway and turned toward the sound. Eris laughed. He swiveled toward her and got to his feet. The constant grin became a snarl.
"Nah, nah, nah,"
Aaron shouted.
"Save it for the field, kiddie, or I'll shock you so badly you won't be able to go out, and Charlie will be declared a winner by default. Flight Killer won't like that, and I'll make you like it less."
Disgruntled and fuming, clearly off his game for the moment, Claw resumed his seat, glowering at me. It was my turn to grin. It felt dark, and it felt good. I pointed at him.
"I'm gonna fuck you up, honey."
Bold words. I might regret them, but when they came out, they felt just fine. 5. Sometime after noons, the fourth set was called. Again, there was the waiting, and one by one, they came back. Double first, then Stooks, Quilly last. Stooks was bleeding from a cheek so badly cut I could see the gleam of his teeth, but he was walking under his own power. Jaya gave him a towel to staunch the worst of the bleeding, and he sat on a bench near the buckets, the white towel quickly turning red. Freed was propped in the corner close by. Stooks asked if there was anything Doc could do for his slashed face. Freed shook his head without looking up. The idea that the wounded were supposed to fight another round, and soon, was crazy, beyond sadistic. But I had no doubt it was true. Murph had killed one half of the comedy team. If he drew Stooks in the second round, Murph would put him down easily, stabbed shoulder or no stabbed shoulder. Claw was still looking at me, but the grin was gone. I thought his appraisal of me as an easy kill might have changed, which meant I couldn't count on him to be careless. He'll move fast, I thought, the way he moved on I. In my dream, Leah had said, "You're faster than you think, Prince Charlie." Only I really wasn't. Unless, that was, I was able to find some hate-powered overdrive gear. The fifth set was called. Burned and Gully, Little Hilt and Big Akka, Eris and a short but muscular fellow named Viz. Before Eris left, Jaya embraced her.
Nah, none of that,
one of the night guards said in his unpleasant locust-like buzz.
Hump, hump.
Eris left last, but she was the first to return, bleeding from one ear, but otherwise unhurt. Jaya flew to her, and this time there was no one to stop their embrace. We'd been left alone. Akka came back next. For a long time after that, no one. Finally, Gully was carried in by a gray man, not Percy, and laid on the floor. He was unconscious, barely breathing. One side of his head looked caved in above the temple.
"I want him next," Bolt said. "I hope I get you next,"
Amit growled.
"Shut up."
More time passed. Gully stirred but didn't wake. I went to the piss trough. I needed to go, but couldn't. I sat back down, hands clasped between my knees, as I always did at baseball and football games before the national anthem was played. I didn't look up at Claw, but I could feel him looking at me, as if his stare had weight. The door opened. Two night soldiers flanked it. Aaron and the Lord High passed between them.
"Last match of the day,"
Aaron said.
"Claw and Charlie. Come on, kiddies, hump it."
Claw got up at once and walked past me, turning his head to give me one final grin as he did. I followed. Iota was looking at me. He raised one hand and gave me an odd salute, not to his forehead, but at the side of his face.
"I know his weakness."
As I passed the Lord High, Kellen said,
"I'll be glad to be rid of you, Charlie. If I hadn't needed 32, I would have done it already."
Two night soldiers ahead of us, Claw ahead of me, walking with his head slightly lowered and his hands swinging at his sides, already made into loose fists. Behind us walked the Lord High and Aaron, his lieutenant. My heart was beating slow and hard in my chest.
"He did me down that once, but I learned from it."
Up the corridor we walked, toward the brilliant rows of gaslight rimming the stadium. We passed the other team rooms. We passed the equipment room.
"The blow. Iota goes down. The bucket rolls. Iota crawls for his pallet. Claw turns to look for the bucket."
We passed the officials' room, from which there was a way out, at least according to Percy's note.
"I throw the drumstick, it hits a bucket, Claw turns to look.
I started to get it then, and sped up a little as we came out of the corridor onto the dirt track surrounding the playing field. I didn't draw even with Claw, but almost. He didn't look at me. His attention was on the center of the field, where the weapons were placed in a line. The rings and ropes were gone. Two leather gloves with stabbing spikes on the knuckles were on the table where there had been drinks during our practices. There were the fighting sticks in their wicker basket, and two short stabbing spears in another. Iota hadn't answered my question when I asked, but maybe when I was leaving, he did. Maybe that odd salute he gave me wasn't a salute. Maybe it was a message. There was some applause as we followed the night soldiers toward the VIP box, but I barely heard it, nor did I pay attention at first to the spectators flanking the box, or even to Eldon, Flight Killer. I was paying attention to Claw, who had turned to follow the rolling bucket on the floor of the cell he shared with Iota, and the drumstick I'd hucked at him in the team room. Claw, who didn't seem to realize I had pulled almost even with him. And why? I know his weakness, Iota had said, and now I thought I did too. I hadn't given me a salute. He'd mimicked the sort of blinker a horse might wear. Claw had either little peripheral vision or none at all. 6. We were led, no, herded, to the part of the track in front of the Royal Viewing Box. I stood beside Claw, who didn't just shift his eyes to look at me, but turned his whole head. Immediately, Kellen whapped him across the back of the neck with his limber stick, drawing a thin line of blood.
Never mind looking at the make-believe prince, you great idiot. Pay heed to the real king instead.
So Kellen knew what the other prisoners believed. And was I surprised? Not much. Dirt could only conceal the striking change in the color of my hair for so long. And my eyes were no longer even hazel, they were gray going on blue. If Eldon hadn't insisted on the full complement of contestants, I would have been killed weeks ago.
Kneel,
Aaron shouted in his nasty buzz of a voice.
Kneel, you of the old blood. Kneel before the new blood. Kneel before your king.
Petra, tall, dark-haired, beauty mark beside her mouth, green silk dress, complexion as white as cottage cheese, shouted,
Kneel, old blood! Kneel, old blood!
The others, there couldn't have been more than 60, 70 at most, took up the cry.
Kneel, old blood! Kneel, old blood! Kneel, old blood!
Had this happened with the other contestants? I didn't think so. This was special to us, because we were the last match of the day, the star attraction. We knelt, neither of us wanting to be whipped with limber sticks, or worse, shocked by the auras of our captors. Eldon Flight Killer looked like a man at death's door.
One foot in the grave and the other on a banana peel, Uncle Bob would have said.
That was my first thought. The second, close on its heels, was that he wasn't a man at all. He might have been once, but no more. His skin was the color of an unripe Anjou pear. His eyes, blue, huge, wet, each as big as one of my palms, bulged from wrinkled, sagging sockets. His lips were red, somehow feminine, and so loose they sagged. A crown sat askew with a horrid jauntiness on his thin white hair. His purple robe, shot with fine windings of gold, was like a gigantic caftan that covered him all the way down from his bloated neck. And, yes, it was moving. Like he was holding a pet underneath, Jaya had said, except it was rising up and subsiding in several different places at once. To my left, on the track, stood Red Molly in a short leather skirt like a kilt. Her thighs were muscular and enormous. Her long knife hung in a scabbard on her right hip. Her orange hair stood up in short spikes, a kind of punk rock do. Wide suspenders held up her skirt and covered part of her otherwise naked breasts. She saw me looking at her and puckered her lips in a kiss. Flight Killer spoke in a clotted voice that sounded nothing like the insectile buzz of the night soldiers. It was as if he were speaking through a throat filled with some viscous liquid. No, none of the others had been subjected to anything like this, they would have said. The horror of that inhuman voice was indelible.
Who is king of the gray world, formerly empress?
Those in the box and the rest of the spectators responded smartly, shouting it out.
Elden!
Flight Killer was looking down at us with those huge, egg-like eyes. Limber sticks came down on my neck and claws.
Say it!
Kellen buzzed. Elden, we said.
Who brought down both the monarchs of Earth and the monarchs of the air?
Elden!
Petra shouted it with the rest, and louder. Her hand was caressing one of Elden's hanging green jowls. The purple robe rose and fell in half a dozen different places. Elden, Claw and I said, not wanting to be swatted again.
Let the match begin.
This was a call that seemed to require no response, except applause and a few cheers. Kellen was between the two of us, just far enough away to keep his aura from touching us.
Stand and face the field, he said.
We did so. I could see Claw from the corner of my eye, on my right. He turned his head to take a quick glance at me, then faced forward. 70 or so yards dead ahead were the weapons of combat. There was something surreal about their careful spacing, like prizes to be won in some homicidal game show. I could see at once that someone, maybe Flight Killer himself, but my money was on the Lord High, had tilted the game in Claw's favor, if not outright rigged it. The wicker basket of stabbing spears, obviously the weapons of choice, was on the right, which was Claw's side. 20 yards to the left was the table with the spike-studded leather gloves. 20 yards further to the left, more or less facing me, was a basket of fighting sticks, useful to clobber with, not so useful when it came to killing. No one told us what came next. No one had to. We were going to sprint to the weapons, and if I wanted a stabber instead of a glove or a bando stick, I'd have to get ahead of Claw, then cross in front of him.
You're faster than you think, Leah had told me.
Only that had been in a dream, and this was real life. You might ask yourself if I was terrified. I was, but I was also drawing from that dark well I'd discovered as a child, when my father seemed bent on honoring the memory of his wife, my mother, by crashing and burning and leaving us homeless. I had hated him for a while, and hated myself for hating. Bad behavior had resulted. Now, I had other things to hate, and no reason to feel bad about it. So, yes, I was terrified, but part of me was also eager. Part of me wanted this. Flight Killer called out in his bubbling, inhuman voice, something else to hate.
Now!
7. We ran. Claw had moved with blinding speed when he attacked I, but that had been a quick burst in an enclosed space. It was 70 yards to the weapons. There was a lot of weight for him to carry, over 300 pounds, and I thought that sprinting full out, I could draw even with him halfway to the spread-out fighting gear. Dream Leah had been right. I was faster than I thought. But I'd still have to cut in front of him, and when I did, I'd be squarely in his slightly reduced field of vision. More dangerous still, my back would be to him. I veered left instead, leaving him an uncontested path to the spears. I hardly glanced at the spiked gloves, Lethal they might be, but to use one, I'd have to get in Claw's stabbing zone, and I'd seen how quick he was when he had an opponent up close. It was the fighting sticks I went for. Over several playtimes, I'd gotten quite handy with them. I grabbed one out of the basket, turned, and saw Claw already charging, the spear held low at his right hip. He swept it up, hoping to open me from balls to belly and end it fast. I stepped back and brought my stick down on his arms, hoping to jolt the spear loose. He cried out in pain and anger, but held on. The audience pattered applause, and I heard a woman, almost certainly Petra, scream,
"Cut off his pizzle and bring it to me!"
Claw charged again, this time with the spear raised high over his shoulder. There was no finesse to him. Like Mike Tyson in the old boxing vids I'd watched with Andy Chen and my father, he was your basic brawler, used to putting his opponents down with a brutal frontal attack. It had always worked for Claw before. It would work now against a much younger opponent. He had the advantage in both weight and reach. According to the dream Leah, I was faster than I thought. I was certainly faster than Claw thought. I stepped aside like a toreador avoiding the charge of a bull and whistled the fighting stick down on his arm just above the elbow. The spear flew from his hands and landed on the grass. The audience gave an "ah" sound. Petra shrieked her displeasure. Claw bent to snatch up his weapon. I brought the fighting stick down on his head, two-handed, using all my strength. The stick shattered in half. Blood jumped from Claw's scalp and began running down his cheeks and neck in freshets. The blow would have laid out any other man, I and Amit included, but Claw only shook his head, picked up the stabbing spear, and faced me. No grin now. He was snarling and red-eyed.
"Come for me, you bitch's child."
"Fuck that. Let me see what you've got. You're as dumb as you are ugly."
I held out what remained of my fighting stick. Now the end facing Claw was a rat's nest of splinters. It was hard wood, and if he ran on those splinters, they wouldn't buckle. They'd punch into his gut, and he knew it. I feinted at him, and when he drew back, circled to his right. He had to turn his head to keep me out of his blind spot. He lunged, and I stuck him in the meat of one forearm, tearing open a flap of skin and sending a stream of blood to the green grass.
"Finish him!"
Petra screamed. I knew her voice now and hated it. Hated her, hated them all.
"Finish him, you great ugly hulk!"
Claw charged. I moved to the left this time, backpedaling behind the table with the fighting gloves on it. Claw never slowed. He was breathing in quick, dry rasps. I threw myself to the side, the point of his spear barely missing my neck. Claw hit the table, overturned it, and landed on it, snapping off one of its legs. He held on to the stabbing spear, but that was all right with me. I moved in on his blind spot, jumped on his back, and squeezed his midsection with my thighs as he reared up. I put the remains of my fighting stick against his throat as he lunged to his feet. He clawed at me from behind, whacking my shoulders with his big hands. What followed was an insane piggyback ride. I had my legs locked around his thick waist and my shattered 3 feet of fighting stick digging into his throat. I could feel each attempt he made to swallow. He began making a gurgling sound. At last, with no other option but unconsciousness followed by death, he threw himself on his back, with me beneath him. I was expecting it. What other move did he have left? But it still blew the breath out of me. 300+ pounds will do that. He rocked from side to side, trying to break my grip. I held on even as black spots began to dance in front of my eyes and the sounds of the cheering spectators began to sound echoey and far away. The only one that came through clearly was the voice of Flight Killer's consort, like a sharp needle stabbing into my head.
"Get up! Break his grip, you great brute! Get up!"
I might be crushed to death under the great brute, but I was damned if he was going to break my grip. I'd done a lot of push-ups in my cell and a lot of pull-ups on the rope rings. I put those muscles to good use even as my consciousness began to wane. I pulled, pulled, and at last his struggles began to weaken. With the very last of my strength, I shoved his top half off me and wriggled from beneath his bulk. I crawled across the grass, hair hanging in my eyes, taking in great whooping gusts of air. It seemed I couldn't get enough, or get it down to the bottom of my abused lungs. My first attempt to find my feet failed, and I crawled on, gasping and coughing, sure that fucking claw, motherfucking claw, was getting up behind me, and I'd feel the spear going in between my shoulder blades. On my second try, I made it upright, staggered around in a drunken circle, and beheld my opponent. He was also crawling, or trying to. Most of his face was obscured with blood from the head hit I'd given him. What I could see was purple from strangulation.
"Finish!"
Petra screamed. Red spots flushed through her white makeup. She seemed to have changed sides. Not that I wanted her support.
"Finish! Finish!"
The others took it up.
"Finish! Finish! Finish!"
Claw rolled over and looked up at me. If it was mercy he wanted, it wasn't mine to give.
"Finish! Finish! Finish!"
I picked up his spear. He raised one hand and touched the heel of his palm to his forehead.
"My prince."
And brought it down. I'd like to tell you that I came back to my better self at the very end. To say I felt regret. It wouldn't be true. There's a dark well in everyone, I think. And it never goes dry. But you drink from it at your peril. That water is poison. 8. I was made to kneel before Eldon, his bitch, and the other important members of his retinue.
"Well fought. Well fought,"
Eldon said, but in an absent kind of way. He was, indeed, drooling from the sides of that slack mouth. Some pussy liquid, not tears, oozed from the corners of his huge eyes.
"Bearers! I want my bearers! I'm tired and must rest until dinner."
A quartet of gray men, deformed but brawny, came hurrying down one of the steep aisles, bearing a palanquin with gold trim and purple velvet curtains. I didn't see him get into it, because I was gripped by the hair and pulled to my feet. I'm tall, but Red Molly towered over me. Looking up at her reminded me of looking up at the statue I'd climbed to watch for the monarchs coming home to roost. Her face was pasty and round and flat, like a great pie plate dusted with flour. Her eyes were black.
"Today you fought an enemy,"
she said. Her voice was a basso rumble, far from comforting, but better than the locust buzz of the night soldiers or the liquidity of Eldon's voice.
"Next time, you fight a friend. Should you survive, I'll cut off your pizzle."
She lowered her voice.
"And give it to Petra to add to her collection."
I'm sure that the hero of an action movie would have managed a smart comeback, but I looked into that wide face and those black eyes and couldn't think of a fucking thing. 9. It was the Lord High himself who escorted me to the team room. I looked back once before stepping into the corridor, just in time to see the palanquin, curtains drawn, swaying up the steep aisle. I presumed Petra, she of the beauty mark, was inside with Flight Killer.
"You surprised me, Charlie,"
Kellen said. Now that the pressure of his duties as the day's master of ceremonies was over, he sounded relaxed, maybe even amused.
I thought Claw would have your head quicky-quick. Next time, you'll fight one of your friends. Not Iota, I think. We'll save him. Perhaps little Jaya. How would you enjoy stopping her heart, as you did Claw's?
I didn't answer, just walked ahead of him down the sloping corridor, keeping as far from his high-voltage aura as possible. When we reached the door, Kellen didn't follow, only closed it behind me. 32 of us had gone to the field. Now there were only 15 to register surprise that it wasn't Claw stepping in, but Charlie, banged up but otherwise unhurt. No, make that only 14. Gully was unconscious. For a moment, they only looked at me. Then 13 of them fell to their knees and put their palms to their foreheads. Doc Freed couldn't kneel, but he gave the salute from where he sat against the wall.
My prince,
Jaya said.
My prince,
the others echoed. I had never been so glad in my life that Empis was a land without closed-circuit TV. 10. We washed off the dirt and the blood. The horror of the day stayed. Eris got Freed's pants down and cleansed the deep wound in his thigh as well as she could. Every now and then, she'd pause in her labor to look at me. They were all looking at me. Finally, because it was creeping me out, I told them to stop. Then they made a business of not looking at me, which was as bad, maybe worse. After 10 or 15 minutes, 4 night soldiers came in. The leader gestured with his limber stick for us to come. There were no greys, so Gully had to be carried. I moved to take his top half, but Amit shouldered me aside, gently.
No. Me and the big boy will do it.
Presumably meaning Iota, since the other big boy was now so much cooling meat.
Help the doctor if you would.
But I wasn't allowed to do that, either. I was, after all, the promised prince. Or so they thought. Hair and eye color aside. I thought maybe I was just a 17-year-old kid who happened to be in good shape, had gotten lucky drawing an opponent without much side vision, and had been able to harness his worst impulses long enough to survive. Besides, did I want to be the prince in this dark fairy tale? I did not. What I wanted was to get my dog and go home. And home never seemed so distant. We made our slow way back to our cells in Deep Moline. Murph with his shoulder wound, Jaya and Eris, Amit, Iota, Doc Freed, Bolt, Bendo, Measle, Kamet, Double, Stooks with his badly slashed face, Quilly, Akka, unconscious Gully, and me. 16. Except neither Doc Freed nor Gully would be able to fight the next round. Not that they would be accepted, I knew better. They would be placed against opponents who'd slaughter them quicky-quick for the pleasure of Eldon, Petra, and Flight Killer's smattering of subjects. Those who drew Freed and Gully in the next round would, in effect, be given a bye. Nor were Murph and Stooks likely to survive to what would be called in March Madness the Elite Eight. The door at the end of the cell block was opened. I and Amit carried Gully through. Quilly and Freed came next, Quilly basically holding the doc up so he wouldn't have to try walking on his bad leg. Not that Freed was up to much walking. He was in and out of consciousness, chin bouncing on his chest. As we entered Moline, he said something so terrible, so lost, that I will never forget it.
I want my mama.
The gas jet inside the door had fallen out of its hole again and dangled on its metal hose. It had gone out. One of our guards slammed it back into the hole where it belonged and looked at it for a moment, as if daring it to fall out. It didn't.
Special dinners tonight, kiddies,
one of the others proclaimed.
big food and dessert to follow.
We entered ourselves. I, Stooks, and I were now enjoying, if that is the word, singles. Quilly carried Freed into his cell, laid him gently on his pallet, then went into the one he shared with Kamet. We waited for the night soldiers to exit with their arms outstretched, causing the cell doors to slam, but they just left, locking the door to the outer world behind them. One bolt, two bolt, three bolt, four. Apparently, as well as big food, we were to be allowed to mingle, at least for a little while. Eris was in Gully's cell, examining his head wound, which was, no need to go into details, horrific. His breath came in irregular rasps. Eris looked up at me with tired eyes.
"He'll not last the night, Charlie."
Then she laughed bitterly.
"But then none of us will, for it's always night here."
I patted her shoulder and walked back to Iota's cell, which she had elected not to leave. He sat against the wall, wrists on his knees, hands dangling. I sat down beside him.
"What the devil do you want?" he asked. "I'd just as soon be alone, if it please you, that is, your royal fucking majesty."
Speaking low, I said,
"If there was a way out of here, a way to escape, would you try it with me?"
He raised his head slowly. He looked at me and began to smile.
"You just show me the way, my love. Only show me."
"What about the others? Those who are able?"
The smile widened.
"Does royal blood make you stupid, Princey? What do you think?"